Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
Greetings to you, my fellow Portlanders. From high atop the studios of the Emerson News Network, located looming above the milk packing district of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of everything you need to know about everything. My name is Rick Emerson, alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, readying news about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A car full of zombies crash on I-84. Roman Polanski won't be extradited to the U.S. And a teenager kills his mom's boyfriend for cutting off the cable TV.
And there you have it. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. Without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, July 12th, 2010. A car full of people dressed as zombies crashed on Interstate 84 near downtown Portland on Friday, causing initial confusion by people who witnessed the crash. Portland police said the car was swerving in the eastbound lanes of the freeway just east of the Lloyd District after 9:30 p.m. when it rolled over and crashed onto its top. Emergency crews took five victims from the crashed area hospitals. Police said that in their investigation, they learned the people inside the car were dressed in zombie costumes and were headed to a party at the time of the crash. Sergeant Greg Stewart said people who witnessed the crash initially thought the victims' injuries were much more serious because of the zombie costumes.
Now, I have to ask at this point, nobody's dead, right?
No.
There's nobody who died because of this, because this is going to be one of those stories where I laugh, or I snicker, or I make some sort of a guffaw, and then it turns out that everyone involved, you know, died at the scene or something. Oh, to have been there, and oh, for there to have been some sort of, I don't know, surveillance footage of this, or the security camera footage, or like an ODOT camera.
How great would it have been, though, if I don't know how elaborate their makeup was, but if somebody like had a dangling eyeball, things like that.
Oh, man, it's just...
They come stumbling out of the car.
This is the sort of story that really makes you get out of bed in the morning. It's what makes it worthwhile to get up and face another soul-crushing, traumatic day at the helm of this sad parade we call life. Because every now and again, you get a carload full of zombies, which sounds like the beginning of a fantastic joke somehow. Excellent. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Roman Polanski will not be extradited to the U.S. to face child sex charges. CNN's Atika Schubert explains the reasoning behind Switzerland's decision.
The original DA...
I'm sorry. Hold on one second. Just go ahead and continue on with that.
Polanski is now sort of a free man. They've lifted his... He does have some travel restrictions, but they did... Basically, they lifted what they called the restrictions on his freedom.
Now, is that sort of, when they say restrictions on his freedom, is this, it's not just like they let him out of the cell. This was like he couldn't go anywhere.
Yeah, he couldn't travel.
Was he wandering the streets, as they say?
I think he was locked up in his house.
The expression goes. All right. So this is a discussion about Roman Polanski. The cut you're talking about is...
Atika Schubert from CNN.
All right. And let's see if I've got that here. All right.
It's clearly a rape under U.S. law, so it's a serious felony. And, by the way, it's also a serious crime under Swiss law.
I think that's actually the former prosecutor.
Yeah, probably.
Paul Callan.
I'm sorry. These have my labels have gone all they've gone all wonky on me here. Let's try this one, shall we?
The Swiss authorities requested for court records from the United States. That request was rejected, and because of that, the Swiss authorities say, quote, considering the persisting doubts concerning the presentation of the facts of the case, the request has to be rejected.
So I'm unclear about exactly what facts in the case have been not presented clearly. What is the X factor, do you suppose, in this whole story?
I have no idea.
What, I mean, am I missing something? I don't mean to be that guy, but it does seem... It does seem fairly straightforward. I mean, there was some drugging and some raping and a hot tub and
yeah,
you know, whatever.
I don't know. I have to admit to being... I got so tired of this story years ago. And then it came back up again. And it's one of those things... It's one of those stories where if you point out anything like, well, you know, the girl was there of her own free will and she didn't want to press charges and she doesn't want to pursue this, people just keep... will come back and say, she was a child and there were drugs involved. And you go, okay, well, yeah.
Well, that's what...
I don't know. This is another one of those situations where my overriding feeling is always like, where is her mother's culpability in this? The mom who knew her 13-year-old daughter was hanging out at Jack Nicholson's house with a bunch of grown men running around the pool in her bathing suit. You know, why isn't mom face any kind of...
Do we know anything about the mom? Do we know... is there any sort of... do we have any clue as to what sort of home life this girl came from?
Not really. I know nothing. I know nothing other than... I feel sorry for this woman who is now 40. How old is this woman now? And she's... And whenever this rears its ugly head again, she just goes, can we just let it go?
Yeah, but, please. You know... But the thing about being raped when you're a kid is that you don't really get to make that decision. Because if that were the case, we'd just let you drive a car and fly a plane and vote and go to war and launch a first strike nuclear assault against Russia. So that's one of those things where, you know, the man steps in and says, you there, you just, why don't you go tend to your bleeding rectum and we'll take care of Mr. Polanski for you. Except we can't because we're being thwarted by France and, you know, Woody Allen. So, all right, there you go. I'll wait for Woody Allen and Martin Scorsese to stand up and give Chris Brown a standing ovation the next time, you know, he's awarded something somewhere. Because apparently that's what we do now. So, all right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News. By the way, I had a little bit of kerfuffle with my microphone there when you went to do that first bit of sound. I was having a little bit of an issue, so that's why I was having you fill there, as they say. All right, we're good
Vamp,
to go.
As yes, we say in show business.
Exact. Stretch. It's not ready. The sequins aren't attached yet. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, and we are plunging headlong into another pile of news. Don?
A New York teenager has been accused of killing his mother's boyfriend because he disconnected the family's cable. Police said Arduis Ovalis...
His name isn't Arduis, really?
Okay, Adruis.
Arduis, my brother...
Adruis, I don't...
My brother Tedious.
Adruis.
Moving
why,
forward.
Why aren't people just named Steve?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Adruis Ovalis, 15, plunged a knife into the man's chest 3 times last Friday, despite his mother's desperate pleas to stop. Ovalis was arrested on a murder charge in the death of Albert Matthew Hartzog, 26, and they're living in the housing project, the Sonia Sotomayor houses.
Really?
In the Bronx, yes.
When did she get those named after her? Was that just recently, do you suppose?
I'm assuming.
Ah, how proud she must be. I hope they have my name on something where somebody is brutally stabbed.
Police said the teen punched his victim repeatedly before stabbing him. Mr. Hartzog worked nights as a security guard at a nursing home and reportedly felt that 15-year-old Ovalis was freeloading off his pay. When the teenager disappeared for 3 days last week, Mr. Hartzog cut the family's cable TV connection. And apparently, kid didn't like it.
Well, who would? I mean, really, it's...
I like the my favorite line in this, too. It says, the teenager stood in the doorway of the blood-spattered apartment waiting to be arrested as Mr. Hartzog collapsed in the hallway.
See, that's the thing I don't understand. I don't get if you're going to take the trouble to actually stab a guy. I mean, if you're going to go out... Because the guy's dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, which clearly the kid must have known. If you're going to go to the trouble of actually finding a knife, waiting for the guy, stabbing him once, stabbing him repeatedly, waiting to see if he's actually going to bleed out... Why would you not then, I mean, as long as you're already pot committed, as they say in poker, why would you not then attempt to lamb it a little bit, you know? Add a little bit of fleeing the scene of a crime, or maybe evading law enforcement, resisting arrest. I'm not encouraging you to commit further crimes, you understand. That's not what Rick Emerson does. But, I mean, you're already in it, so you might as well be in it, as they used to say about Lotto. All right, here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A referee hit by a toddler-driven golf cart in Springfield, Oregon, during a high school football game, has filed a lawsuit against the Springfield School District and the child's mother. In his $265,000 claim, Kenneth Lee Burke says he suffered a concussion and a damaged spinal cord disc in the accident at Thurston High School in 2008. The suit claims that the school district is negligent because one of the employees left the golf cart unattended on the sidelines with its ignition key turned on. The suit accuses Brendan Newell of negligence because she allowed her two-year-old boy to play near the cart.
I don't understand how a toddler is driving anything.
I know. You wouldn't think that his feet would, like, reach the pedal, unless he just climbed into the cart and climbed onto the gas pedal, and then it just went forward and
yeah, but I mean, don't you have to...
How
does a... I've never driven a golf cart. I feel like I'm missing part of the male cultural imperative because of that, too. Like, I've never had some sort of a kooky anecdote where Jackie Gleason and I just sort of crashed into a swimming pool together through, you know, in the middle of a wedding party.
Did you ever drive the Autopia cars at Disneyland?
No.
It's kind of similar.
Because you're not really driving those things. You're on a track.
Yeah, but you're still accelerating and decelerating, and you can steer to a degree.
You know, Autopia is just a form of mechanized deception, Don Taylor, because you're driving nothing. Walt Disney is driving everything. It really is a metaphor for the American political process when you think about it. You have the illusion that you're steering, but in reality, the decision was made long before you got there.
And as a teenager growing up in Southern California, I can tell you it was one of, like, three actually safe places that you could smoke marijuana.
Autopia?
In Disneyland. Yeah, because it's an open-air thing, and it's not constantly monitored by cameras. And so you'd get out and you'd be driving around the Autopia car, and then the other places were the sky buckets that go the Skyway to Tomorrowland or whatever that goes across the top, and the back of the final car in the train that went around.
Is this something that was passed around from teenager to teenager, like a doobie at a frat house party, sort of knowledge of where you could get baked at Disneyland?
Indeed it was.
All right, well, okay. Well, there you go. So the moral is keep your toddler away from the golf cart.
Exactly.
All right.
News broke yesterday that Derek Thomas, the nephew of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, had allegedly been beaten and tased by hospital security after being admitted and refusing to don a hospital gown. Thomas, who's epileptic, reportedly suffered a massive seizure as a result of the incident. AOL reported that the 25-year-old Thomas was admitted to West Jefferson Hospital on Thursday after what some news outlets described as a possible suicide attempt. When orderlies asked him to put on a hospital gown, he refused and tried to flee the facility. That's when security guards stepped in. A scuffle ensued. One of the guards punched him, pulled out his hair, then shocked him with a taser.
Pulled out his hair?
And then he had an epileptic seizure.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Well,
that's a bad way to end that if you're a cop.
It's the sort of thing that would be bad under normal circumstances, but then, like, oh, yes, P.S., he's Clarence Thomas's nephew.
Your uncle is who? Ah, crap. It's one of those things where you knock off at noon and you just go get yourself hammered because your life is pretty much over at that point. Your career is taking a bit of a downward spiral and there's going to be no pulling out of that. So you might as well just get loaded up on Yukon Jack, friend. That's my advice. All right. Just back on the Disneyland thing for a second.
Sure, why not?
You know, even as these words leave my mouth, I realize it's going to take us just down some blind alley of pointless discussion. So I'm going to... And we already had a little bit of a hairpin turn at the top of the show where I had to switch microphones, like in midstream. So I'm just going to plunge on... we're going to plunge on ahead here. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up today at 1 o'clock. Galen Huckins, who you may not know by name, but you may know a project he's associated with, that is Film Music, which happens at the Hollywood Theater, where they put new audio tracks, new vocals, music, and sound effects, all live underneath classic films such as the Max Fleischer Superman cartoons. He's going to join us today on the Rick Emerson Show. Also, Aaron Duran will have the top five lame drug songs. And I'll tell you how my audition for TV's Leverage went this morning. Here's a hint. It was awesome. So that's coming up at...
Were there accents involved?
Only my own.
Because previously there have been accents.
No, but no, there was no accent today at the Leverage audition. But tonight I have a voiceover audition, which I swear to God... They want me to sound... I won't say who it is yet. This will be my shameless tease. But I have a voiceover audition I have to do tonight where they want me to sound like a specific British celebrity. It's clearly one of those, if you can't get, then get so-and-so. So, like, you can't get, you know, like, you can't get Martin Sheen. You get... What's that guy's name? It's Bob Estevez. Joe Estevez.
Oh,
Martin Sheen's brother.
Joe Estevez.
And so you'll hear this guy doing ads for, like, the National Rifle Association.
Is that actually Joe? Oh.
Oh, it's Joe Estevez. No, I'm not. It's Martin Sheen's brother. And he sounds just like Martin Sheen.
Because I've heard a voiceover person that I've always thought, that guy sounds a lot like Martin Sheen. No.
It's awesome. That guy has figured out the way to make money, and it's to go to all these organizations that would love to be able to claim that they had a liberal doing ads for them, like the NRA, and he'll say, Look, my name is Joe Estevez, and I sound just like my brother. I'll voice your spot for 10% of whatever he would charge you. So the NRA has
brilliant.
Joe Estevez voicing their spots. So you listen to it and you go, by God, Martin Sheen, President Bartlett loves guns, which is awesome. So anyway, but they want me to sound like a specific British celebrity. I'll tell you who it is next hour. That's coming up at rickemerson.com. This is Legion of News at pdx.fm, which you can hear via iTunes as well, and also on your handheld device at mobile.pdx.fm. This is Don Taylor.
So you decided just to not question, go in the direction with the question about Disneyland.
No, you know, because it's one of those things that I care about, and as much as I don't mind inflicting crap on the audience most of the time that they probably couldn't possibly care less about, this is one of those moments where I'm going to exercise just a modicum of self-control. And like Autopia itself, we're going to stay on track.
I'm proud of you, Rick Emerson.
That's what I do. Today, Rick Emerson grows up just a little. Here's Don Taylor.
Bahamas police captured the so-called Barefoot Bandit yesterday, ending the 19-year-old criminal's two-year flight from U.S. justice. Colton Harris Moore was arrested before dawn and flown to Nassau, where the Royal Bahamas Police Force will be holding...
Where?
Nassau.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I heard Nassau just
Nassau.
There.
Nassau.
Oh, okay. All right.
Where the Royal Bahamas Police Force will be holding a news conference. Harris Moore will be charged with illegal weapons possession and other crimes in the Bahamas, with possession of an unlicensed handgun as the most serious of the charges that are expected to be presented Tuesday. Harris Moore did not fire his gun at officers during his capture Sunday. The commissioner said the suspect spoke with police and understood his predicament, but declined to say whether there was any kind of confession. He's a very eloquent, obviously an intelligent young man, a spokesman said.
And this is the guy who was he stole a plane and he stole a boat and he stole a train and a goat.
He stole at least five planes, including aircraft he allegedly lifted in Indiana and flew more than 1,000 miles to the Bahamas.
And so, but he's called the Barefoot Bandit. Why again?
He broke into dozens of homes and committed a whole lot of burglaries in Washington, in Canada and in Idaho, and left these barefoot footprints behind that investigators found when they were looking at the scene. So apparently, he liked to rob houses barefoot.
Is this the first time that they've caught him? In other words, have they caught him before and he just escaped, or he was let go, or is this the first time the man's got him in the clink?
Well, I think he grew up. I think he was a juvenile delinquent as a youth. I might be wrong. I don't know. I think you actually know more about his background than I did, because you used to follow this story, and I...
Well, this was a favorite of Tim Riley's, and it's unclear to me exactly. Yeah, he has an adult criminal history, but he has become a little bit of a kind of a folk hero. In fact, I think next hour, I believe we have a fantastic, and by fantastic I mean awful in like every conventional sense of the word, song. That someone has recorded and put on the internet about our friend the Barefoot Bandit. So we'll
because
get to that.
You know, you can't be a folk hero without a ballad.
No, I demand that a ballad be written about me. By the way, today, if possible. Here's Don Taylor.
The Metro Run Oregon Zoo announced this morning that it's doubling the price of admission for a program that allows people of low incomes to visit. Effective Tuesday, the second Tuesday discount goes from $2 to $4. Children under 2 will still be free. We remain committed to providing a reduced admission program, said Kim Smith, Oregon Zoo director. Unfortunately, the economic times we live in are having an unprecedented impact on our budget. She said the nominal increase will help relieve budgetary pressures brought about by the slow economy. The zoo still gets record attendance, but once they're inside the zoo, visitors aren't spending as much money.
Well, what is there to spend money on when you're inside the zoo?
Food, sodas.
Just the usual crap.
They probably have those machines where you get those weird-smelling wax bears.
No idea what you're talking about.
maybe this is something that maybe kids don't get to experience this anymore. Don't you remember being a kid and you'd go to, like, some tourist thing, and there'd always be a machine where you put in, like, 4 quarters or something, and it would pour a mold of something out of wax?
Is this a Donnywood or something?
No, they have them all over the place at zoos.
It would pour a mold of wax.
It would make a little wax figurine for you, and then it would cool. It was super cold, and it would drop out the slot, and they smelled like weird, like hot wax.
Uh huh.
These did exist.
I believe you. Okay.
And they used to have them at zoos.
Right. All right. Whatever you say.
They had them at the Los Angeles Zoo.
All I remember is that thing that would smash a penny into the shape of Multnomah Falls. That's the only thing that I remember. Those things, but I don't remember that. And when you would go to
It's like the Bonneville Dam or some crap. You'd put in a quarter, and they would give you a bunch of crap to feed the sturgeon. And that's when you were still allowed to... Now, see, I sound like an old guy. That's when you were still allowed to get near the sturgeon, before a bunch of jackass juvenile delinquents decided to spend their weekend spray-painting the helpless fish who were just sitting there in, like, a little tank going, well, I guess I'll just... What's going on? And then there's some kid up there that putting his, you know, putting his initials on the back of a dinosaur fish. So
I have a cool thing on my keychain that's like a pirate piece of eight. Stamped with, you know, my own personal message on it. You know where I got that? Disneyland.
Yeah, all right.
Many good things happen at Disneyland.
Yeah, I've never seen the wax bear, but I'll take your word that it exists.
Things.
No, it's
See?
Fine. I'm not going to, you know what, I don't want to make a whole federal case out of it. Here's a, don't look up. See, I can tell you're doing it right now.
No, I'm not. I was looking to see if anyone on the text box had said, yes, wax G-jaws.
What, I don't understand. What is the point of, is it a wax replica of the animal that you're looking at right then?
It was, well, it was wherever you were. I mean, if you were, like, at, I don't know, some kind of a famous building or something.
And it'd be a wax replica of the building?
Little wax building. If you were at the zoo, I remember at the Los Angeles Zoo, there were, like, two or three of the machines in different parts of the park, and they did different animals. There was one that did lions, and there was one that did a giraffe, and there was
How
one
How big was
did
the
a
wax
bear.
Figure when it was done?
It's like about, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches tall. It wasn't very big.
And so what was the big selling point of this, that you would get to see it molded in front of you?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It was an injection mold thing, and the whole front of the thing was glass, and you would see the big metal plates go together, and you'd see the wax pour in, and then it would, like, you know, sit there for a second. Then I guess it would do something to cool it, and then the thing would open up, and it'd go plonk down into the thing and come out, and yay, they have a wax bear.
Okay.
It was very cool when you're six.
I'm no closer to understanding this than I was at the beginning of this conversation, so we'll just move on. You are listening to Legion of News right here on PDX.fm. Don't forget, it is archived here every day, as well as at legionofnews.com. And Dawn Taylor's smug smile indicates that someone in the text box is affirming the truth of her insane story.
Someone in the text box says, I have a wax tiger from Miami Metro Zoo.
Okay, thanks.
Somebody else says, wax vending machines, was this 1912?
Yeah, that's one of those things that it was like right next to the Edison kinescope where you view the What the Butler Saw film or something. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Excuse me.
That was your instant karma right there. I'm not even going to turn your mic off.
Oh, my Lord.
I'm not going to hit the cough button. Just going to let everybody hear the sound of your larynx as it just falls away to nothing.
Many in the African-American community are coming down hard on California NAACP President Alice Huffman for her support of legalizing marijuana in California. Bishop Ron Allen, with the International Faith-Based Coalition, says Huffman must resign.
We are saying she must step down, she must resign.
I'm sorry, that was, either that was the world's shortest soundbite, or I actually just turned the sound off. I wonder if that was actually it. Let's listen again, shall we?
We are saying she must step down, she must resign.
Well, okay.
He's concise, I'll give him that. He's right to the point. There's no screwing around.
Huffman says she supports legalizing marijuana as a civil rights issue. She's facing strong opposition from International Faith-Based Coalition Bishop Ron Allen and about 20 community leaders that he's rounded up.
When you look,
I'm sorry.
She must give up that post to someone that clearly understands why the black community is being devastated and will not open the door to drug dealers and drug pushers to push their poison to our children and our next generation.
I never understand where these doors are that are being thrown open. Those doors are located right next to the tubes down which the country is always going, apparently. Yeah. And
clearly he never rode the Autopia cars at Disneyland.
No, he did not. And is there a big, something going on, is there a ballot measure I'm not aware of where, like, when you enter first grade now, you know, you get, like, your pencil box and your pencil sharpener and, like, a coat on which you hang, a coat hook on which you hang your thing, and then also just, like, a big box of weed that they hand out?
Yes.
Is that something to keep children calmer and more docile?
Yeah, it's cheaper than the ADD meds.
All right. Is this because of the legalizing marijuana ballot measure? Is that the deal? That must be it.
Well, it's California, so, yeah, is there one in California?
Well, yeah, because
don't even know what our ballot measures are here.
I wonder that must be what she is talking about, and therefore what he is pissed off about, because in California there's that ballot measure to decriminalize marijuana use by adults, I think, you know, up to a certain amount or whatever.
Oh, heavens.
Which I think just passed by a real slim margin, but then, of course, there's just the endless daisy chaining back and forth as everybody tries to sort of figure out whether it's going to be the law, and then it's going to go to the Supreme Court, and then blah, 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 blah. which all of it just tires me out because it seems like this happens about every 2 years, you know, where there's some law somewhere to legalize the possession of small amounts of weed. You know what this is? The legalizing small amounts of weed is sort of like the assisted suicide thing here, where I can, or the gay marriage thing, where I can never quite tell if it's actually just become legal or not. Like, at any given moment, I never really know whether gay marriage is legal.
All three of those things also share the weird belief that people have that it's the first step in some kind of Armageddon. That, you know, you legalize small amounts of marijuana for personal use, and the next thing people are, like, shooting heroin in your doorway.
Yeah.
You know, you let gay people get married. Well, next thing you know, people are marrying circus ponies. Yeah, it's the ridiculous lengths they take, you know, they extrapolate these things out to.
Is there some sort of a marijuana dispensary on a Division here in Portland? Division in like 20, I probably shouldn't say, because if it's not, then I'm going to be...
I know there's one here in town somewhere.
I think there's actually one.
We have a couple of them, but I think there is. There's one in that neighborhood.
I believe there is a, it's one of those smoke-in places where you go in there and you can't leave. And not if you have a card or something, I would imagine you do.
Yes, you do.
But I think there's one actually not.
This isn't Amsterdam.
Well, who knows? The whole weed thing is just so unbelievably confusing to me. Anyway, I can never. It takes more time than we have right now. But I just want to get somebody like a cop or a lawyer or somebody on the show one of these days and just put him in the chair and just say, not that I even care. It doesn't even really apply to me. It's just I just hate not knowing stuff. Just sit him down and go, look. Tiny amount of weed at my house, illegal or not, just tell me. So if my neighbor has the weed card, and then I got the weed card, you know, like if you have anxiety and I have asthma, you got some weed at your house, I'm out. Can you give me some of yours? And are you gonna, you know, are you breaking the law if you do? Is this one of those things that everybody claims to have the answer on it? No one knows.
I would think that since it's treated as a prescription, that you're not allowed to share with somebody.
Yeah, but then where are you getting it from?
You're getting it from a dispensary.
Yeah, but I mean, the dispensary, I guess what my point is...
They are licensed to dispense.
Yeah, but they're not licensed to grow. You can't just have a grow operation going. That's a thing the man would almost certainly bust you for at this. But you can't have a whole warehouse full of pot plants growing. See, that's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Well, I don't know the specifics. I do know that that if you do have a dispensary, some do operate their own grow operations. And they are allowed to... up to a certain amount. The thing is, it's regulated how much they're allowed to grow.
I think it's one of those things. I think it might be one of those like Cuban cigar things where like the weed just appears, like at the Great Gazoo, just you know, hello dum dum, and drops like a bag of pot or something. Then it's like you're good, but you just can't create it. Well, we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
A woman in Maupin, Oregon. Am I pronouncing it? Is it Maupin? Maupin?
Maupin. M-A-U-P-I-N?
Yeah.
I think so,
Maupin.
Yeah.
In Maupin, Oregon, a handcuffed woman there escaped from a patrol car Saturday night after she was arrested on a driving under the influence charge. Oregon State Police troopers said 40-year-old Carla Charlie was in an area where 300 people were camping at Maupin State Park along the Deschutes River. A trooper and a Bureau of Land Management officer said they stopped a car in the camping area for a traffic violation and an investigation into unlawful attempt to sell salmon. During their investigation, they took Charlie into custody on a driving under the influence of intoxicants charge, placed her in the caged back seat of the BLM officer's SUV. The trooper and the officer were interviewing witnesses when someone in the crowd yelled that she had escaped and run away. Two deputies, a BLM ranger, and the troopers searched the area around the river for 2 hours, but were unable to find her.
It seems like, you know, you're able to get out of the back of a caged cop car. You probably are sober enough to be driving. That ought to negate the driving under the influence charge right there, if you're actually able to negotiate handcuffs or, the back seat of a police cruiser or something.
I know. I can't get, like, the back door of my car open from the front seat, reaching around behind. And that's without handcuffs. So,
and
she
what
was
is,
doing pretty good.
I'm unclear about that. She was... Illegal selling of salmon.
That's what they were investigating, yes, and when they found her.
Is there a big salmon smuggling ring or something that I wasn't previously familiar with?
Apparently. It's like the marijuana. You know, you can sell it, but you're not allowed to actually possess it.
I see. All right.
I don't know.
Well,
that's...
And I think it is Maupin. It's a point of pride with me that when my wife was gone over the weekend to some... I don't know, some navel-gazing Buddhist thing. And that I was able to tell her the town was called Klatskanai. Mm. So that's it. That's my pronunciation for the month.
Right. We should be very proud of our listeners, by the way, in that when we started talking about not knowing the marijuana laws, like a whole bunch of windows popped up with people going, I know how much pot you're allowed to have.
But here's the thing. By definition, they're not allowed to answer because they're stoned. And here's the reason I know that. No, because there's no one, I mean, you know this, there's no one who sits and thinks about a drug more than a pothead, which is weird because you'd think it would be like cokeheads because it, you know, it focuses you on, you know, one thing, you know, for hours at a time. And so you'd think that it would just be some coke freak who would just, you know, sitting at home with a chemistry book, you know, in a bunch of flasks and beakers trying to figure out how to, like, you know, how can I increase the power of these alkaloids? Get me some Allman Brothers or whatever, you know. And pot guys just sit and just, they just obsess about it for hours. And it's like their whole life becomes about weed. No offense. But somebody who knows a whole lot about pot is probably also somebody who smokes a lot of pot. And therefore, you know,
Is inherently untrustworthy?
I was going to say, it's not that they don't know what they're talking about. It's just, I'm willing to bet that, they may have perhaps a vested interest in the outcome and may not be an unbiased party from whom to get the answer. All right, here's Don Taylor.
We have a little science news.
It's time for Legion of News's Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Undersea robots maneuvered a mile beneath the Gulf of Mexico on Monday to delicately lower a new, tighter-fitting cap over BP's busted well. A fix the oil giant hopes can finally stop the leak after nearly 3 months.
This is the second day in a row we've had a major news organization using the word busted to describe a massive piece of machinery that is ruining the planet.
The new cap, a 150,000-pound metal stack, was about 300 feet from where it's supposed to be installed on top of the leaking well. A swarm of remote control robots moved around heavy equipment near the seafloor on live video provided online by BP. It was not clear how close the cap was to the well, but the operation was complex and could take longer than expected.
Is this the thing where they finally took James Cameron's offer to help them out? That was the best part of this entire story. This entire the destruction of our home planet has really been worthwhile just for the news conference that James Cameron held where he said, "Call me. I'll come out there right now and I'll fix it. I know what I'm doing."
Does he have robot minions? Because that would be helpful.
I think the answer is almost certainly yes.
Maybe that's
you?
Where the remote control robot minions came from.
Doesn't this sound like, in other words, because you knew the thing about Cameron offering to help.
Yeah.
And they just sort of said, yeah, whatever, you crazy James Cameron, what do you know about it?
And Kevin Costner as well.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I thought you knew about that.
Are you effing with me? Really? Kevin Costner?
No, when he was making Waterworld, they ended up, you know, kind of polluting the water a bit with all of the gasoline from all of the ridiculous things in it. And he started thinking about cleanup of stuff. And over the last, like, 10 years or so, he's invested a buttload of his own money into developing an oil cleanup and filtering.
Is that why we haven't seen much of him? Has he been busy healing Mother Earth?
Perhaps. But, yeah, and he offered to give the technology to BP. Well, give the technology. I believe the deal was that he would provide the technology, and he got to keep the oil.
If they would bankroll Postman 2.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll, when you said Kevin Costner, I thought maybe he was just going to teach them how to somehow have an endless supply of dry cigarettes while they're doing this. But if you didn't know any better and I said James Cameron had finally been allowed to go down there and clean house and then there was an army of robots sort of roaming the bottom of the floor, you would completely buy that. All right. I bet they did it and they're just not telling us.
And it also makes me think that thing from the abyss is going to show up and help out.
Yeah.
That water weenie thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty much it. That's the science.
It's not all that impressive except for the robot part because from what it sounds to me, like they're just putting a giant manhole cover on the thing.
But it's being done by remote-controlled robots.
Yes, an army, a swarm
of
remote-controlled robots.
Of robots.
Don't we have, like, psychic dolphins or dolphins with lasers or something that can be sent down to do this sort of thing? Well, they'd probably know better than to get near it. Yeah. That's why we have to use the robots. All right, here's Don Taylor. Is that the conclusion of Science on the March?
That's all the science.
Well, I'm sad. All right, there's Science on the March. Yeah. All right.
Although, speaking of octopuses, Paul, the psychic octopus who predicted the outcome of 8 World Cup finals, is going to retire. Tanya Munzig, A spokeswoman for the Sea Life Aquarium in Oberhausen, Germany, told the Associated Press that Paul won't be giving any more predictions about football or politics or lifestyle or the economy. She said, Paul will go back to his former job, namely making children laugh.
Is this because of the death threats that he was getting from, was it from Germans or was it from, where was it that he was getting, he was, there was some country.
It was the Germans, because he picked Spain over Germany. And
but he's
so,
in Germany, right?
Right, he's a German.
How quickly that country turns on its own. You think that, I guess that would stop surprising us at some point, but I mean, what are you going to do? All right, well, there you go.
Well, aquarium employees presented Paul with a golden cup, similar to the official World Cup trophy. It was garnished with three mussels, but Paul still ignored it for several minutes as it was lowered into his tank. Then he plucked up one of the off of the mussels and ate it.
All right, there you go. That ends the World News Organization's covering of an octopus and what he does with his day. Don't forget, coming up at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson Show will be gracing the airwaves of rickemerson.com. Today, Mr. Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com will be here. Also, Galen Huckins of Film Music, who, if you saw Outlook Portland, I believe this last week, Galen Huckins was the guest there, and just he was introduced. I was introduced to him by our mutual friend Todd Tulsis, and Galen is just the most amazing thing they do with that Film Music joint, where they take these classic films and they strip away the audio track, so it's just the visuals. And then at the Hollywood Theater, they have these live performances where they do the music, the Foley, you know, the sound effects, and then the vocals live. They did it with Plan 9. They did it with the Fleischer Superman cartoons and a Gamera film, by the way. And so the next thing is Gulliver's Travels. Also today, top five lame drug songs. And we'll talk about how my Leverage audition went this morning. Here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Money Magazine released their top 100 best places to live in America. Number one was Eden Prairie, Minnesota. Portland does not appear on the list anywhere. It was based on housing prices, median income, and quality of life, however you judge quality of life. Beaverton and Hillsborough both appeared on the list at 96 and 98.
What do you mean that Hillsborough appeared on the list and Portland didn't?
Portland did not appear on the list, but Hillsborough did.
When you said, well, first of all, let's just be honest. When you talk, Beaverton and Hillsborough are just, they're just suburbs of Portland. I mean, I know that they claim to be separate cities, but we all know that's not
true.
But
I think they are fully incorporated cities.
They're just, but that's only in the, that is only in a de jure sense, in a de facto sense. They're just sort of, they're like Gresham, you know? They're just sort of barnacles, you know, on the underside of Portland. I mean, we all know this to be the case. It's not like Tualatin, which I think actually is its own separate city.
Beaverton and Hillsborough are also their own cities.
No, I'm saying perceptually speaking, though. Perceptually speaking, nobody views Beaverton as being a separate city. So it seems unfair that Hillsborough would be on the list. I could almost grant you the Beaverton thing, but I don't know when the last time you took a good long drive through Hillsborough was. I don't really know that anybody sort of passing through that port of souls and says to themselves, by God, I should pull the car over and just get out and live by the side of the road right here so I never have to leave this glorious place. No one does that. How is it that Portland cannot be on the list? Is that just because...
I think it's because of our unemployment. Level of unemployment.
So it's not because we've been on the list, because I think the last 5 or 6 years we've been on that best places to live.
No, I think when they factor in like housing prices, median family income, and like our unemployment rate, I think it all of those things are kind of out of whack here at the moment.
I instinctively disbelieve, by the way, that any place in Minnesota is one of the best places to live, because I've not been there. I'm basing that solely on the reaction from people I know who are from Minnesota, and they all go back there, but it's all sort of grudgingly. You know, it's like if they have to go back and visit friends or family or something, they all just, they sort of do it with this kind of, you know, picking up the cross and heading to Calvary kind of a thing.
Would you like to hear how Money Magazine describes Hillsborough?
Yes, I would.
It actually ranks 92 out of 100. Hillsborough is in the Portland area, with both ski trails and the beach an hour away. This diverse city has become known as the Silicon Forest. Large employers like Intel give the city its high-tech reputation, and new jobs are moving in. Hillsborough is also a place where residents can stroll through a historic downtown shopping area, visit a weekly Saturday farmers market, watch a sports game at Hillsborough Stadium, or visit nearby wineries and golf courses.
Yes, because none of these things could be done in Portland at all. You're right. It must either come down to... It must either come down to the unemployment thing, or they're just tired of us being on the list.
That is possible.
Glorious downtown Hillsborough. Yes, put it on your calendar today, won't you?
What kind of sports do they have at Hillsborough Stadium?
Running from cops. All right, here's seriously. I mean, it's, you know, maybe there's a thriving Hialeah League there or something that I wasn't previously privy to, but I'm suspecting that's not the case. All right, rolling and sorting. That's what they have there. Here's Dawn Taylor.
An Orange County, California woman was sentenced to a year in jail for sending hundreds of threatening text messages to herself. Prosecutors said Jean Mundango Mununga told police her former boyfriend and her sister-in-law were behind the threats. Mununga was sentenced Friday in Santa Ana Superior Court. She was convicted in May of 3 felony counts of false imprisonment by fraud or deceit and 2 misdemeanor counts of making a false police report. Prosecutor said Mununga started sending the threatening messages after she and her former boyfriend stopped dating in 2008.
Oh, this is a frame the boyfriend thing.
Yes.
What is her name? Mundango Mazatlan?
Jean Mundango Mununga.
I wonder if any of her unhappiness stems from that name. Because that's not like a hyphenated last name. One of those is her middle name, right?
Yeah, no, those are, yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the derivation of that name is, but it seems like whatever your culture, parents ought to know that there's just certain things that are going to get you taunted in the schoolyard. And having a name that sounds like you're some sort of fruit-based Bahamian drink is one of those things. That's going to lead to an unhappy childhood. Here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do a little entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday on the Rick Emerson, I'm sorry, on the Legion of News program right here on PDX.FM.
Batman is returning to the big screen, but he's not going to have a Joker to play opposite. Director Christopher Nolan says he will not bring back the Joker, the villain played by the late Heath Ledger, in a role that earned him an Academy Award a year after his death. Nolan would not disclose what villain or villains might take on Batman in the next film, which is due out July 20th, 2012, the same weekend that brought the record-breaking debut of The Dark Knight in 2008. Nolan said in an interview to promote Inception, his sci-fi thriller that opens Friday, "For me, Heath was the definitive Joker. I wouldn't feel appropriate to readdress that character."
Well, I don't think they were. I think the fear wasn't that they were going to be getting somebody else to play the Joker. It was that they were going to be doing that. They were going to be doing that Laurence Olivier thing that they did with Sky Captain, where they just.
Oh yeah.
Whereas my friend Brandon would say, where they just gumped his ass right into the movie. They took all the archival footage and because they can do that now with science and so forth. I mean, and don't get me wrong.
Well, they did that with Oliver Reed in Gladiator as well.
That's right. And it started with, I mean, the first time I remember that happening was that god-awful, that thing where Fred Astaire was dancing with a vacuum cleaner. Whatever the hell that commercial was. Were you just, that's where I mean, as much as I'm kind of a dyed-in-the-wool agnostic, you know, and I don't really have much of a belief in I don't cotton to much of an afterlife sort of a thing. I have no reason to believe that that's true, but I do hope that it's true from time to time. And one of those moments was when I saw Fred Astaire being made to dance with like a Dirt Devil vacuum cleaner commercial, and I just prayed. I just prayed that there was some kind of an afterlife so that Fred Astaire could come back and just give a good sort of ectoplasmic sodomizing to whoever it was. You know, that just, you know, but meanwhile, but like in a really stylish, sort of flourishy kind of a way.
A stylish sodomizing.
Exactly. You know, where it had like a little panache to it, a little a little flair. But I think everybody's fear was that they were going to computer generate new footage of Ledger or have his voice somehow replicated by a computer, you know, and have him. The rumor that was going around which is sort of believable, the rumor that was going around is that there was going to be a scene in Arkham Asylum, and it was just going to be a cameo, basically. That there was going to be,
like the camera going down the hallway, and he was going to be in a cell.
Yeah, like the Silence of the Lambs thing. Yeah. And it would be like, well, there's Miggs, and there's whoever, and then there's, and there's the Joker. And he would just say something that would be sort of like cool and creepy, and you go, ooh, but he's dead. Ooh, but he's alive. Ooh, but he's dead. Oh, my God. And whatever. Which I have to say I would not be wholly opposed to if it was done right. But the thing is, it's never done right.
No.
Ever, 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 ever. And just so we can all be on record now as hearing me, Rick Emerson, say this, on Monday, July 12th, 2010, the story is very telling the way that it's written. Where it says Christopher Nolan says he will not reprise the, you know, whatever, the Joker, blah, blah, blah. He won't, but eventually they'll get somebody who will. I mean, that's the thing. It's eventually they'll bring in, you know, some Schumacher-esque guy who sold, you know, and it's like their hiring criteria must be you. Can you ruin a beloved franchise? Yes, I can. All right, you've got the job. And then they'll bring him on, and, you know, and he'll do it, and it'll suck. So, all right, well, there you go. So there's that.
New Jersey rocker Jon Bon Jovi tore a calf muscle towards the end of a show. Bon Jovi injured himself toward the end of the band's two-and-a-half-hour concert at the New Meadowlands Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey on Friday night, then limped back and forth across the stage for an encore of Living on a Prayer. The singer injured his leg during a cover of the Dave Clark 5 hit Glad All Over. About halfway through the song, he leaned heavily on his microphone stand to support his injured leg. "My calf muscle just blew out. Whoa," he said from the stage. "I got another leg. I don't need this one."
Well, well done, John. There you go.
He also said, "Don't you worry, folks. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm old. What can I tell you? But I'm still good looking."
See? I mean, you got to admit. Look, if I had a nickel for every time that I saw some dirt heel band that had one single and, you know, and thought they were the Beatles cancel a show because some guy, like, sprained his finger or had a sore throat, I mean, it's... The thing about guys like that is you get to that stage, I think, in your career, and you realize how lucky you are to still be able to do that for a living as opposed to, like, painting houses or, like, the, you know, be like the bass player from Kix who's off putting up a billboard somewhere, you know, by the side of the freeway in Los Angeles. So, you know, good for you, Jon Bon Jovi. Well done.
Mel Gibson is heard allegedly acknowledging that he hit the mother of his 8-month-old daughter in a recording released by a celebrity news website. The 8-minute recording posted Monday by Radar Online, which we will not play because it's just filled with...
I've got an edited version we'll be playing later on, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's purportedly a phone argument between Gibson and then-girlfriend Oksana Grigorieva. A voice sounding distinctively like Mel Gibson's is heard telling her that she deserved to be hit after she chastised him for allegedly punching her in the face and breaking two of her teeth. He just gets more and more charming.
I was talking to Greg Nibbler about this on Friday. Greg and Sarah were here, and we, you know, because they take Fun Employment after we're out of here every day, and we were talking about the whole. And for guys, it's always the same thing. Guys always say, "Can I watch Braveheart again?" That is the big tragedy of this whole story to every guy, is that they may not be able to watch Braveheart the same way. But for me, it's not an issue. It's like I have some mental shield that drops or something. I have some weird prism that just drops down in front of my perception whenever I go to watch Braveheart, where I somehow forget that it's like when you watch, it's like watching Last Action Hero or something, where there's like this sort of weird thing where Schwarzenegger doesn't exist in that reality because he's Jack Slater. So whenever I watch Braveheart, I kind of forget that Mel Gibson exists as a person until the movie's over, because otherwise I would just be unable to enjoy it. So as long as I'm able to watch William Wallace, it doesn't matter, you know.
Yeah, I think I won't have any problem separating crazy later life Mel Gibson from the handsome young mentally challenged lawn mowing boy.
See,
in
I don't
Tim.
Know, I don't know what movie that is when you're talking about
it's
Tim.
It's called Tim.
Yeah, but
it was pre-Mad Max, and it's based on...
And he's a retarded lawnmower?
He's a retarded
lawnmower. Not a lawnmower, but you know,
yeah.
What I mean, like a...
He's an incredibly gorgeous and... very slow Australian lad, and he goes to do some lawn mowing and handiwork for divorced or widowed Piper Laurie, and she takes a shine to him. I believe it was written by the same woman who wrote The Thorn Birds.
Really? Rebecca?
I don't know what her name is.
I used to know her name. I don't know why.
But yeah, there's it's very weird and creepy and sexy. It's a very strange movie.
Yeah, I think the first thing. Well, yeah, Mad Max is the first thing I saw him in. And I think when you and Cheryl were talking about this movie on Friday, and I kept thinking you were talking about the Lawnmower Man with Pierce Brosnan.
No.
And whoever that guy is, the creepy guy that plays Job. Can never.
From Lost. Lapidus.
Yeah, I didn't watch Lost.
Yeah.
I'm like many people. I watched the first season and went, they're making this up. I'm quitting now. that's it. I'm pulling the ripcord as we speak. Except that the Lost guy, the Lawnmower Man guy, who I guess is also the Lost guy, always to me looks like the leader of that Symbionese Liberation Army group in the Clint Eastwood movie The Enforcer with Tyne Daly, who has the Laz rocket and then gets blown up at the end of Alcatraz. And it's probably not him. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
That would be Jeff Fahey.
Jeff Fahey. Wait, yes. He's the lawnmower man.
Yes.
Okay, and he's also on Lost?
Yes.
All right, well, see, even though I didn't watch Lost, I'm glad to see that he did something else. Because you see that guy in The Lawnmower Man, which is a movie that everybody seems to have seen, even though it made no money. The movie was just the most abject failure at the box office. Huge bomb. Yet everybody on Earth has seen it like two or three times for reasons that kind of pass understanding.
And it's a terrible movie. Jeff Fahey is amazing in it.
It's an awful film.
But it's a terrible movie.
Yeah, it's an awful film. But you ask somebody, have you seen The Lawnmower Man? They go, yeah, Lawnmower Man. And I don't know what that's all about, but well, I'm glad he found work.
Well, there you go.
What's like the guy that played, speaking of Dirty Harry, it's like the guy that played Scorpio in the first Dirty Harry film, Andy Robinson.
Yeah.
Where you see him and you go, that's a great role. Hope you enjoyed it. And save some money, by the way. You'll never work again. Here's Don Taylor.
Well, that's the end of all of our entertainment. Wow.
There's your sort of a closing. It's like a coda, to mirror the overture at the beginning. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Jesse Jackson criticized Cavaliers owner Dan Gilbert on Sunday, saying Gilbert sees LeBron James as a runaway slave, and that the owner's comments after the free agent forward decided to join the Miami Heat put the player in danger.
Is there some way we can press the troll button and just not hear anything Jesse Jackson says for like the rest of time? Just dig him down enough that his comments no longer show up anywhere.
He said that Gilbert's feelings of betrayal personify a slave master mentality. He sees LeBron as a runaway slave. This is an owner-employee relationship, and LeBron honored his contract. Shortly after James announced his decision last week, Gilbert fired off his letter to Cleveland's fans, which was all in Comic Sans font, and which you've offered a nice rebuttal to.
The Comic Sans thing. I mean, it's like, because that's a, I think we all, at this point, if you don't know, the thing about Comic Sans, you'll note that I wrote this sort of, a parody, a retort to the Dan Gilbert's letter, and I dispense with the Comic Sans thing right at the outset, because at this point, if you don't understand the Comic Sans problem, it's like having a mullet in 2010. If you don't know, it can be explained. You've sussed that out for yourself or you haven't. My thing was just it was like he had just taken some sort of punctuational equivalent of Mrs. Dash and just sort of thrown it all over the screen when he was done thinking that something...
The prodigious use of quotation marks around the wrong words.
And then, like, he would hyphenate things that didn't call for hyphenation, but then he would fail to hyphenate things that should have been that way. I'm on the Jesse Jackson tip now, though, because here's an idea. This is my idea right here. This is the intellectual property of me, Rick Emerson, on Monday, July 12th, 2010. You're hearing me come up with this idea. You know what I'm going to make and market and will then make vast amounts of money selling? Jesse Jackson refrigerator poetry. And you know, but it's only going to have the words like slave, racism, that is not my love child, and then I was there when Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, and that's it, and that's all it's going to. And you can just rearrange it in endless forms, and it'll function in any story in which he is quoted. So, all right, there you go. Here's Don Taylor.
A lack of credit is continuing to be a big problem for the economy. Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says a recent survey of small business owners shows that they're doing all they can to just stay above water.
Consistent with maintaining appropriately prudent standards, lenders should do all that they can to meet the needs of creditworthy borrowers.
And when he says creditworthy borrowers, by the way, that's an interesting code phrase. That means not you, also not me, not Don, probably not anybody within the sound of my voice. That means, as it often does, lending money to people who don't need any more money. Let's see. I think we have one more cut on this, too. This is...
Many reported having had to resort to borrowing through their personal credit cards or from their retirement accounts.
So, I guess the whole issue is whether or not we're going to find ourselves back in the same sort of Groundhog Day scenario in, like, 7 years, because they've miraculously forgotten all of this and then just decided to give Scotty J. another three or four houses that he can't possibly afford.
Well, what I find interesting is it is going to be interesting to see what happens to the credit industry and the mortgage industry as a whole, because they already admit that they're having to start skewing down their standards, because more and more people just have what 5 years ago would have been considered really crappy credit ratings. They're not going to be able to stay in the kinds of businesses that they're doing if they only deal with A-list credit, because not enough people have that anymore after what we've been through the last few years.
It would be interesting to see in some sort of alternate reality what happened if they did just say, well, look, if you don't have a credit score of like 7 whatever, I wish that I could run, and I bet economists probably have computer sort of models that will do this, to run some sort of like Will Wright sim game, you know, like sim U.S. economy, where you just say, look, no one with a credit score under 650 gets to have credit of any kind. Go. And then you just come back in a year and see people have resorted to cannibalism. I'm giving you even odds right now that would probably be the case. That to me, and I do have a point here, is why I have never been a huge fan of the movie Fight Club or the book for that matter, because to me, probably because it would have been too difficult to show in any sort of real true. I mean, it would have been a 9,000-page novel at that point. It was the whole idea that they were going to blow up all the credit reporting agencies and just completely erase records of credit and ownership. And it always felt just like the biggest cheat to me that I didn't get to see that. Because, I mean, you want to talk about a thing that would just absolutely unravel the very basis of American society as we know it. I mean, if you just woke up tomorrow and there was no credit history for anybody, I mean, we would just be effed in the most fascinating way possible. So one of these days, when I have enough money to be like that Haddon guy in Contact who just orbits the Earth and then gets zipped up in a bag, I'm going to try something like that just so I can see it unfold. Here's Don Taylor.
The Ashland Daily Tidings newspaper reports that dozens of deer are roaming the southern Oregon city. Several have attacked people who were walking their dogs, and one recently crashed through the window of a high-end clothing store downtown. I do think something should be done, and I think a lot of people that I know feel that way also, said Ashland resident Doug McDonald, who has faced down 2 aggressive deer this summer while walking his dogs.
When you say deer, well, here's, I'm an idiot. Is deer a gender-neutral term? Isn't it like is deer, oh no, that's doe, a deer, a female deer. I guess not. So maybe deer is the overall and
yes,
it's doe and it's buck.
Yes, because doe and buck.
All
yes.
Right, okay. So these are, well, so that was going to be my question. Do does, you know, in other words, does a female deer have horns or is
no,
that a male?
No, the bucks have horns.
Well, so what is a female deer going to do to you? Nuzzle you to death?
Well, I mean, they have hooves.
Hooves?
They can kick you.
Hooves?
They have hooves.
I think that's... You have a weird pronunciation. Your vowels are a little odd today.
What am I supposed to say? Hooves?
Isn't it hooves? It's not hooves. Wow, we sound stoned.
I've always said hooves.
Hi, welcome to the next Cheech and Chong record.
They have hooves.
All right, we can't continue this conversation. I'm just going to start giggling uncontrollably. Next thing, I'll just start saying gazebo to myself over and over again and giggling.
Well, there is some concern that the deer in towns like Ashland have lost their fur of humans and that they're going to just keep coming closer and there's going to be more and more of these encounters. The wildlife biologists are trying to educate people to stop feeding them. That would be a good start.
Well, tell them to stop being so cute and we'll stop giving them our Pringles.
Birth control darts are being considered.
Oh man,
they're very expensive.
Well, I gotta, you know, when you're done, birth control darting the deer, I got a few houses on my block you need to start on.
Just drive to Gresham and just start firing them out the windows.
You just roll through Lentz and just dart everybody you see. You know what I mean? It's air on the side of sterility, my friends.
Well, the doe that bolted through the window of the clothing store on July 3rd, they said likely was spooked by something and didn't see the glass. That the doe didn't appear aggressive and then ran off into a park. So,
all right.
They're just, there's just too many deer.
Well, let's do one more here, and then we will draw the curtain down on today's installment of Legion of News.
Okay. Metro Transit police officials are investigating how a 19-year-old D.C. man was able to steal a Metro bus, crash it into a tree, and abandoned the bus when officers stopped the vehicle. Police said they arrested the man on Friday and charged him with unauthorized use of a vehicle and fleeing an accident. No injuries were reported. According to reports, the man is not a D.C. Metro employee, but entered a bus facility wearing a bus driver's uniform and drove a bus out of the lot. He allegedly drove the bus about 3 miles before crashing it into a tree in southeast Washington and continued driving it several blocks until police stopped the vehicle after a 911 call about the incident. The man allegedly fled the bus and was apprehended shortly after.
I don't understand anything in that story, but I guess it's not really important. You have been listening to another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is coming up next at 1 o'clock over at rickemerson.com. Today's guest, Galen Huckins of Film Music, Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com. We'll do the top 5 lame drug songs And we will discuss how my Leverage audition this morning went. Don't forget, Legion of News is available on iTunes and is also archived right here at pdx.fm and at legionofnews.com. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor. Advanced Technology and Magic brought to you by Thomas Gill, our executive producer Bruce Agler, and Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.